So today is July 14th, 2009. I'm here at the Ministry of Finance in Jakarta, Indonesia, with Minister Sri Mulyani. Minister, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
You're welcome.
I thought I might begin our conversation by asking you to remember back to the earlier days of your tenure here at the ministry, and perhaps you could comment on the individuals or groups that you could count on to back your proposals for reform here in the ministry, the coalition that supported you and your innovations here.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly the individual who play a very important role is the president, who appoint me to become the Minister of Finance and give me a full trust as well as confidence to lead this very big department that is Minister of Finance. Second one, if a group of people is the top echelon of the Minister of Finance, they are not actually really keen and excited with the idea of reform, because at that time, as I remember on the first meeting with them, I asked and challenged them why the department or the Minister of Finance or government in general is not trusted by the public. It's always seen as a corrupt institution, and how could we live in an institution who is perceived by the public in such a very humiliating way. So it's more like a motivational meeting for me to discuss with them what kind of institution that I really want to work for, as well as for them to really see and how we can achieve that goal. In a way that their response that it is, well, the idea of reform is good, it is always very important, but they think it is undoable. It's because the idea is just too big. They just cannot translate this into something which is workable and can be programmable. So then I said, if we think that the problem is so big, but even if you talk about elephant, or you can talk about anything, universe, if you really start by dividing or cutting into pieces so it has become digestible, I think the first stuff we should talk is about, can we describe the problem first? Because without describing the problem, we don't know how to cut, and then we can digest and so on. So then I start and brainstorming with them, and I start to discuss, what do you think about what we are lacking? What is the goal that you already mentioned? Because I came here, there is a very good strategic and program as well as mission, vision, which is already outlined by my predecessor. So I said, I'm coming here, I'm not bringing any new vision or mission. It's a very nice one, I think it's okay. Now I'm thinking about how should we achieve that. So we start by discussing and describing what is really the problem of the Ministry of Finance for about 2-3 months, actually. And then we start to say that, well, then we have to start doing it. And I said, because reform is such an important, it's so big, it's so significant, then this is cannot be done with just a trivial effort. And at that time I said, I intended to establish the team. It was an ad hoc team, but the team itself is the, what you call it, the reform team now, is actually in the structure of the Minister of Finance. You call it the expert staff of the minister, which is, they are not in a structural, they are usually pick up, or in Indonesia, historical and cultural situation, those people who put in there is actually the one who is not used as a structure. Whether they are unwanted by the minister because they are not fit, or you cannot downgrade them. So they usually is just not really the expert team, like what you can really pick the expert. So this is like a residual echelon, if you can call it that way. But I said, I don't want, if I have a structure of 15 top echelon, the first echelon in Ministry of Finance, I cannot let you, 6 of them, enjoy the salary, facility, but you're not doing anything. It's unfair for me. I'm the minister. I have to work very hard. I have to take all the responsibility. And you still holding the position as the echelon one of the Ministry of Finance, and you're not doing anything. That's not fair for me. So now I give you the assignment. You become the reform team. I give you mandate. and you are doing it. I think that the team now is become what you call it is the real unit. And I said, I will all use this team to challenge the structural, the echelon. That is those people who feel established in the directorate general unit, which is usually is like a silo, and they have their own little kingdom within the Ministry of Finance. So in a way, it was design as well as the people who influence and creating and making a progress and implementing and delivering all the idea that we have, or I have at that time, and then convince them so we can have the same vision. It's actually the team which is an ad hoc one. And becoming excited because I said, as a minister, I want to see Minister of Finance really work as like central bank, predictability and in terms of the meeting regularity should be there. So I said, every Friday morning, we should have a breakfast. I'm going to give you and serve you a breakfast. I don't care about the budget that we need, but I will invite in my official residence and we are going to discuss only about this reform. And that I will make sure that you have the ownership of this because it's not my program, it's your program. So we have this Saturday, this Friday meeting regularly.
Can I ask, when you decided, when you established this reform team in your mm-hmm. group of experts, did you have a clear idea of who you wanted to be in that team?
Nope.
Or did you just use the people who are already there?
We are using the people who are already there. Fortunately, in this case, it's like this. I should tell you this background story about the unique position that I have at that time. I came to the Minister of Finance with a very high expectation of people and business community and public. It's actually first they want to see me to do this Minister of Finance with a very simple symbol initially that I have to decide or to be taken. What was that? Symbolically, I will be a reformer if I can replace the Director General of Tax and Custom at that time. Everybody knows that these two Director General is the biggest and the most powerful. They are politically linked and influenced in the parliament, in the cabinet, even to the president. So at that time, they are actually taking the time when I'm going to replace, or they are going to see me that I'm going to co-opt it by them. 3 months, I didn't change them. I'm discussing with them and discussing a lot about each, I learn about the organization. I discussed with the president and I said to the president, whether the president agreed with the thinking that the first fresh start that will create confidence is that I have to change this to Director General. Not because they are bad, not because of, I'm presupposed, I'm at that time, doesn't want to make a prejudgment, and I said, not because I hate you, but there's people just don't trust you, and I cannot work with people that, with the person or the official, which people has already make decision that you are not trustable. So I really ask them, apologize by saying that, well, I have to really remove you. And I think at that time the president gave the blessing, the permission, so. And then I replaced them in the first 6 months. And the first one, the Director General of Tax, is almost retired, so it's only a couple of months before his retirement. But the other one is still quite young, I mean, still have 5 years. And he's very skillful, have a strong leadership and so on, strong, long experience. So he becomes staff ahli, that is the expert team. So this is like, as I said, it's tempat pembuangan, it's like a place for you to put somebody you don't want. It doesn't mean that they are not good. But for whatever reputation, they just cannot be used as a structure. So I put them, and I said, what a waste that this person has been experiencing to lead the 10,000 people under him. He must have some leadership, and I can see that he has a little bit. Why should I make him like an idle person? So I asked him, could you lead this reform team? Can you imagine that the person that I fired, in the sense that I replaced him, and then he become person who lead the reform team? And I said, you work for me, I'm going to control you. It is my reputation who is at stake, but you will work according to my guidance.
So it sounds that in all these changes, at least in this initial period, the support of the president himself was crucial to to allow. Could you elaborate a little on that relationship, the type of support, how you maybe communicated the president's support for you to others in the ministry, let them know that this support was there?
Well, it doesn't have to be stated to the other ministers. But the president have a unique relationship with each of the cabinet member, and certainly the time that I came here was the reason that I came here to replace my predecessor was actually have a very difficult background of the economic situation at that time. The fuel price increased, the budget is almost collapsed, the economic confidence is dwindling, and so on. So it's really like the president put me in charge for all of this to restore the confidence back. And certainly within 1 year before, as my previous ministerial position as a minister of planning, our relationship has been quite strong and he have a full confidence. So in a way, he knows me from my track record. It's only 1 year, but he's very comfortable. So he always expect me in the sense that I explain him about how I'm going to lead these ministries, what is the challenge, and then what action that need to be taken. And I always consult to him, and I said, Mr. President, in other country, as far as I remember, even in the United States, the Treasury is always actually have a coffee morning every week with the president. So if you really trust me and you want me to do such an important job, definitely you have to spare time to always have time to discuss with me about the situation. I'm not demanding once a week to have a coffee morning and so on, but at least I have the privilege to always talk with him. And I guess in a way that he like and he love to be in charge also, in the sense that because he is the one to ultimately responsible for the progress as well as the risk. And that's why I said, this is going to happen, this is the risk, but I have to take this risk, but this is what we are going to get. So in a way, that's built the what you call it, the working relationship with them. But if you ask whether other ministry has some influence, as far as I remember, no, I guess.
And I understand that in some of your reforms, Parliament has been somewhat resistant. How did the President help you with dealing with Parliament?
Well, it's not really the right description saying that the Parliament is really resistant in a way. First, when we launched the reform, it's become a headline. And I said to all my staff, the only thing that will discipline us is transparency. Because then we always have a constant critics from the media. So you have to open all the weaknesses and tell them what is the program that we are having, and this is the time frame that we are having. So they are not going to ask, if you claim that your reform, why it is still bad? Because it is not going to be overnight, over week, or over months. So we are telling them, this is going to be our time plan, and you can always ask me, and we have to. So I met with all the media chief editors, with the all the reporters. I talked to the television, with the parliament. So when it's become the media headline, the parliament love it. I mean, this is the reform period, right? Everybody love to be associated with the idea of reform. So in the parliament, when I presented this program, they like it. I don't hear any critics, only one or two, which is they said, well, it's good, but we are skeptical you can do it. Okay, if it is skeptical, but if, as long as you're not opposing, I'm going to do it. Okay. But the hardest time is when I ask them to approve the salary increase. Because when whatever I'm doing, changing the people also, of course, when I replace the Director General of Tax and Custom, some response from them, they are going, why you change, that's a very talented people, they are good to us, and so on. But I said, I have to start with a new. But when I have to ask for the remuneration to be improved or increased quite significantly, and that's implied the budget, so I have to really work very hard in the parliament. The president certainly knows about that. He instructed, he endorsed, he make a speech in front of the parliament on when we submit the budget. But the parliament testing politically in the whether this is really the idea of president or only the minister of finance. Of course, this is the idea of the president. And then, well, I think in a way I have to convince them. I give them all the document. They said, this is the work of the Minister of Finance, or it's just a consultant work. This is our work. This is my team. And if you have time, I'm going to present you all the program. So they convince by all the proof that we are having. So I think in a way the parliament is quite, even if I can qualify, is very supportive. I don't recall any really significant difference. But I have to spend quite time to talk, to do the hearing, yes, but I think it's quite normal. Because I'm using public money for this reform, right? In a way.
So what made the timing seem right to both you and the president? Because this is an issue we usually come across, is that there are moments that are more suitable for initiating reform than others. So I'm curious, what made that seem like an opportune window?
Well, I came when the budget is already passing the very difficult time of increasing fuel price by more than 100%. So there is a fiscal space because of the increasing fuel price, so reducing the subsidy. Secondly, at that time, the global economy is a very strong growth. So the situation was so favorable. And I said to them, we have to do the reform while the situation is good, because this is not going to be last forever. That was like 2006 early. I didn't know that there will be a crisis like this, of course, at that time. But I said, the situation is not going to be like this forever. So I don't want Indonesia have to do crisis to do reform because of the crisis, just like what we did in 97-98. Because the result, we have our own experience, was not always good, or even we can be very, very disappointed because it is not well-thought reform. It is a urgent reform, but it is dropped by the situation. It is enforced by other institutions like the IMF program and so on. If we want to do it because we don't want to be dictated by others, we have to do it now. So I think the trigger in terms of the time is because I see that this is a quite a good time. So you are not in a position of really risking your budget. So your thought, your mind is not occupied mainly by the crisis mode. So this is the perfect time. We can do it peacefully. We can discuss rationally with the parliament. And the people can also patient enough to wait for the result in this case. So I think, yeah, it's more like that.
So as you were saying, those were definitely good times. But of course, right now, the times are not so good, not only for Indonesia, of course. Mm-hmm. So it begs the question, how do you maintain support for your reforms when factors outside of your control, in this case, have changed? How do you keep people behind reform?
Well, first, in the past 3 years, at least, and I think I also read some report from the IMF or World Bank regarding the budget situation and especially on our tax reform. One sentence or two sentences, which is certainly become the observation important to be noticed, is actually that with the reform, the revenue of the government has not dropped, usually. So basically, theoretically, maybe they expected with the reform, because I changed a lot, the function of the organization is going to be disrupted, and then it will have some impact in terms of the revenue. But in Indonesia, it's a different case. You say that we reform, we change quite radically and fundamentally. We increase the cost of the personnel. But it is not creating the budget deficit. If we even actually have a very shallow and very small budget deficit. So in a way, that result, while when the commodity price boom and we try to do the tax intensification, the revenue is increasing almost 3 times since the beginning of the reform. So in a way, people appreciate the result. Now, if you ask, the political support is very strong still, continue. They even expect that this reform will be continued and have the tangible result. In terms of the difficulty that we are having, our budget is in a healthy position. So we are not facing a situation like the US or UK now, and Japan and other, which is now they are having such a very difficult budget structure. So we are still very healthy. So even now the situation is how I can motivate the bureaucracy to become the institution who can solve the problem, because the problem with Indonesia is like the infrastructure development, the government spending that really can stimulate the economy is not yet become an effective because of so many factors. The central local government, the inefficiency of the other bureaucracy, and so on.
So many of the reforms that you've done within the Ministry of Finance have been bureaucratic or administrative reforms, which aren't typically associated, I suppose, with the Minister of Finance.
Mm-hmm.
At what point did you decide that you had to approach administrative reform and not just policy reform as a Minister of Finance?
Well, first, I think in terms of the foundation as well as the reason is because the state finance law has been revised. As you have 2003, if you ask with our team reform, they always start to say that since the crisis, we adopted a new state finance law, number 17, number 2003, the treasury law, which has never existed in Indonesia, now we have it, the accountability and reporting of the budget and the auditing, independent audit of the government spending by the external auditors is there. So in a way, that's become the template, the frame of policy in terms of the regulation and law is already there. That will require change of the Minister of Finance because we are still having the legacy of the old structure. So in order to do this, which the issue of governance, check and balance, accountability, transparency, this should be translated into the work of us. So in a way, and we also established what you call it the fiscal policy office, because in the past, the structure of the Minister of Finance is not clear. So all is only centralized in the ministers. So you expect minister to become real, a super minister, thinking about fiscal policy, but at the same time doing the tax, custom, but at the same time capital market, and you have to do all the policy up to the administrative and bureaucratic level. So it's just amazing in terms of it. So I said, you cannot rely on me. I can have a stroke and tomorrow I will dead, and these ministers have to work. So we need to have the established who thinking constantly and checking there is a consistent fiscal policy framework here. So I established fiscal policy framework office, which we follow and look at the other countries, they have it there. So that's become one. If you ask me whether at that time I knew what I'm doing, I'm not exactly knew what I'm doing in a sense. It's just my intuitive. I cannot think this one on my head by myself. Should be some unit. But when I ask, is there any country have? Oh, yes, certainly. So it's just found after we've made decision here. So on the policy level, the reform is more on the consistency of the design macroeconomic policy, how we can even support the industrial trade policy, investment policy, so that they are going to be what you call it, improve the investment climate. Bureaucratic administrative reform, we create structure that can create a good check and balance, but without hampering the bureaucracy work. In a way, and at the same time, there is a multiple task that we have to do. It's parallel, which is totally unrelated. We have tax, we have custom, capital market, we have asset management, we have debt management, all those things. So it's just an amazing, in terms of the organizational complicated structure.
Now, all your reforms have been quite sweeping, and a large part of them have impacted areas outside of your ministry, other line mm-hmm. ministries, parliamentary issues.
Mm-hmm.
In that, what sort of bargains were necessary to really come to a consensus conclusion? How did you meet people halfway? Mm. What did you find you could offer them to maybe increase their...
Within or outside the ministry?
Both would be very interesting.
Well, first, within the Ministry of Finance, certainly as an economist, you are familiar with the one that if my official corrupt, I'm sure that they are earning, they earn much, much bigger than even if I increase their salary by 10 times. So I said to them, I will not and I could not match with the amount that you corrupted from this country. But if I'm the minister here and you still corrupt, you are going to deal with me. So I'm not going to let you to do it until you really give up and I put you in a prison. That's going to be my vow in them. So for them, it's not because of the opportunity cost by saying that they still can corrupt and they think they can doing it without any consequences. So zero cost with total benefit, totally outrageously high. Versus they have to comply with, now I said, I agree that as a bureaucracy, as a bureaucrat, you have to live a decent life. I'm not going to promise you to become rich, but you are in a social structure. You are here, middle class. You should have the car, you should have a house, decent house. You have to be able to send your children to school. That the level of living that I promise is supposed to be a necessary requirement for you to work properly. But I cannot make you rich. If you want to rich, to be rich, out. You can do business outside. So in a way, and I said, and now the cost of committing to corrupt behavior is going to be very severe. And you should do an overkill in a way that 1, 2, 3 cases, for example, one case in a tax. I heard like the human resource department that they are manipulating the mutation, the rotation and so on, promotion. And I said to the director general, the new director general, who should be blaming here? Who make the mistake? Or they? At what echelon? Second echelon? How many involved in this? Well, I don't know. I said, change all of them. Why can't we just replace this guy? No. How many in the unit? 60. Replace them all. So you really give them the message that this time I'm not going to be very generous in forgiving their mistake. I don't know whether you receive money or not, but overkill is necessary, important, to get the message crossed because you are talking 64,000 people under you. In the custom, it's the same also. One, I know, we said that we have been reformed in Minister of Finance, anti-corruption, and so on. And the KPK, the anti-corruption, told me, "Boo, we still see that some of your staff is receiving bribery, petty bribery." Well, you don't have to just complain and reporting. I'm not a gossip people. You come there, you prove it, and I'm going to. So they make the trap. And I said, how many of them? 54 out. This is actually make the Tanjung Priok, our biggest port, is almost paralyzed. But I said, give me 3 months and I'm going to remove all of them. But I have to prepare for the replacement. I think in a way in Indonesia, what make the people in the past is not really believe that we are doing a reform. When the time that you have to do the punishment, usually you are too soft-hearted. And this time I try to explain that I will not be too generous about this. I said I have to really make the message come across, so we have to do it in this case. That's not only on the staff implementation level. Even on the first echelon, I said to you, I will be nice with you guys every day. I will give you all the chance to prove me that you are performing. But if not, within 3 or 6 months, I'm going to replace you. And I really mean it. If you are okay, I will be okay. Because this is not my personal taste. I will not putting my value judgment based whether I like you or not, whether you come from the same ethnicity with me, whether we are the same religious, no. But we all agree that if you not perform, the question is always only two choices for us. Whether I be very, what you call it in English? Forgiving, or you are becoming, what you call it? Too kind, because sometimes the decision is like this. Oh, Ibu, he's almost retired. Give him 2 years' time until he retires. So then, and I have to waste 2 years to give this space for you while the time ticking, and at the same time, I'm going to lose the opportunity to promote people who's more competent and capable. I'm not going to have a double losses in this case. So if you not agree, you can argue with me whether that principle is fair or not. That, so they're okay in this case. As long as I'm replacing people because they knew it is about the performance.
So I'd understood that it was quite difficult to replace civil servants within the Indonesian
yes.
civil service. Mm-hmm. You describe replacing people and firing people
mm-hmm.
with a lot of with mm-hmm. a lot of energy. How are you able to get? How are you able to do that?
Well, replacing is much easier. It's because it's really about your own belief that you're really doing it because not a personalized thing that is really like required by the. But in Indonesian bureaucratic culture, you know, my secretary general and other book, how should I put them? And why should I care about that? I said, well, he's already in a structure. Is there any law in this country telling that once you are in a structure, you are going to be guaranteed in that? No. Then I don't care. I have a lot of problem already. They can find any other job. But if they ask me to help them, I will help if any other job still fit with them. But if not, I will not promise anything. That's one thing. It's about the law and whether you want to do it or not. Secondly, firing people is much difficult, actually. This is much difficult, especially if they're really committing or violating something, committing a crime, like you are receiving bribery, caught by hand, you call it like that?
Red-handed.
Caught by hand?
Red-handed.
Red-handed, okay, like that. Then it will be much easier because there is a consequences in a regulation, civil service regulation. And I said, I don't want to hear from the Inspector General any recommendation saying that, well, because of his attitude is good, then we are going to propose him a mild punishment. No. Any violation, you have to propose me only one thing, the maximum punishment. And I will not ask any more lighter than that. But Ibu, there is always, you see, the choice is sometimes four. The degree of punishment, and I said, it was like a little bit light, a lighter, a little bit light, and all those things. And I said, I'm so tired with that. So they knew that when come to me, I will give them the maximum punishment. And I think that's also something that then deter people about what you call it, the compliance to the regulation and so on.
And on the level of the wider government, a lot of the...
But can I finish with that in the sense that because there is a consequence later on. If you ask me whether I have the mechanism, or the Indonesia has the mechanism, for example, to do anything with the less productive staff, to be honest with you, that is going to be our bottleneck for the reform. Because we have the merit base and so on. I have to secure, but then you have some people which is not really performing well, and now we are having a headache. How should we put these people? So this is a very critical time for me, transition time, that I have to ask the Director General, how should we do with this group of people? Because they are going to erode and destroy the other group, and they feel that they have become unfairly treated, right? They work honest, good, productive, but those other which is not committing a crime, not, but then just not productive. But we cannot get rid of them. So that's become another very challenge. And I've already talked to the Minister of State Apparatus and said, this should be, I'm sorry, this is shareholder call. Hello,
right.
Sorry.
No, not at all.
Mm.
Thank you.
Okay, so a lot of the reforms that you've done within the Ministry of Finance have ended up being expanded into other areas, the Supreme Court, the Supreme Audit Board,
mm.
And Department of Trade mm. and the like. When did you realize that the reforms you were doing within the ministry were you would like to export them? And who made that decision? And how did you go about doing that?
Well, it is politically necessary to do that. And actually also, they will not... you asked about early question about how the other cabinet members supporting my reform. They support our reform because they knew that they are going to have the turn on their own cabinet and their own ministries, and they have to do the same thing. And it's less complicated because, for example, if you talk about trade ministry, it's only like 6,000 people there, and other is much less than that, even only 100, or if Minister of Planning is only 900 people. So they certainly said what they are aiming is the remuneration is going to be very handsome comparing to the current situation. So they said, okay, we will support that reform as long as at next time it's going to be us. So I said, I don't care. Of course, it's supposed to be the whole government should be reformed, because if not, it's going to be very awkward to have only one institution. But at that time, the Anti-Corruption Commission presented in front of the president at that time, they have the idea about how to prevent corruption. And certainly, the ingredient of prevention is the bureaucratic reform. And they said, because the bureaucratic reform is not going to be affordable if you are doing a big bang and at the same time for all, they make a case by saying that the most important may be this part, that is, they actually at that time on external auditors, Supreme Court, because they are the what you call the goalkeeper in this case. So in way, and then I said, no, I'm going to do it Minister of Finance, whether you like it or not. How about the tax department? Well, I'm sorry, I'm not the Minister of Tax, I'm a Minister of Finance, so I have to do it within the Minister of Finance. Whether they are, I have to do it partially or not, I'm not the kind of person who do the partial reform in within the Minister of Finance. So it was agreed. But then we make what we call it the roadmap of this reform, that the next step is going to be like the judge, the Attorney General Office, the Police Department, the military, and then and the, another stages is going to be the rest of the ministry. Because
who was involved in making those decisions about which, about when the road...
The roadmap?
Just talking about the roadmap.
Well, KPK certainly have this blueprint originally. They consult with me and I agree to have, because there is an implication in terms of the budget. Yeah. So we have to calculate the budget implication every time the reform is going to reach a next stage. And certainly in terms of the decision regarding important or not important, we have to consult and discuss with Minister of State Apparatus. So then we establish what we call it a joint reform, national reform team, in which the Minister of Finance is there, State Apparatus, and then the KPK people, and the Minister of the from the civil servant body, the National Civil Servant Body, and the BPK, that is the external auditor, the and the Supreme Court. Because we said, because we become the first pilot project, we have to show that the reform is working and there is a result. So at the first stage, between Supreme Court, ours, and the BPK, that is external audit, we have the regular meeting, because what they are aiming, the KPK, the anti-corruption, is that they see that the Minister of Finance is working well. And the other two is that they claim reform, but they're not doing that much. So they want to create a peer pressure. Basically, if you say reform, why in the Minister of Finance could be in the Minister of Finance could be that far, could be that significant, why it's not there? So we try to create what you call it the peer pressure and peer review among us.
Is there, I mean, do you have a sense that there is a problem in the idea that the Ministry of Finance might outstrip its peer in the pace of its reforms? Could there possibly come a point where the Ministry of Finance reforms so successfully that things are no longer translatable? Should the ministry kind of slow down to keep pace with wider reform?
Well, if I understand your question correctly in this case, of course, everybody always asks Minister of Finance as a resource person in the of the reform. And all my team reform is becoming very busy to do the technical assistance to other. But every time we go back to our own, because we still try to maintain this continuous meeting among the reform team, it's become the continuous program to us now. They always said that the other ministries, the minister themselves have no, like, the bold commitment. They even don't have the idea what reform is. So my staff usually have the observation and come back to me by saying that, I don't think that they are going to be reforming. But why? Well, because the minister doesn't even know what the reform is. They are thinking only that the reform is equal remuneration increase. So there is a worry regarding the, what you call it, the idea of reform has been a little bit misunderstood by others, and that it can affect in terms of the quality of reform that can be delivered. I don't think that the Minister of Finance reform is the best, but certainly it's quite ambitious. I can understand that, but it create quite a difficult benchmark for others to actually catch up with us.
Obviously, the increase in allowance and remuneration has been particularly attractive. Did other ministries or organizations have to meet benchmarks before they were given those allowances?
Theoretically, yes.
Who decided those benchmarks? And
that's the reform, national reform team. Okay. We established the national reform team, as I told you, in which the Ministry of State Apparatus, Ministry of Finance, and then Cabinet Secretary, KPK even. So sometimes KPK become still a whistleblower by saying that I don't think that they are eligible yet. So the veto then in the team, they're saying that, well, at least we will appreciate that they try to change. Okay, if that's the token of appreciation, how about giving them only 35% of increase? So that is the discretion which we can decide within the national team.
Okay. And whose idea was it to establish the national bureaucratic
reform
team?
We are all. I mean, in the sense of what I said, the peer group, the KPK have the idea and have the function for the program of preventing corruption. That is the KPK before the previous chairmanship. And then talk with us, and certainly we both working very closely. And I always use the KPK as a good partner in reform because the reputation is also positive. And the other is the Minister of State Apparatus.
Mm-hmm. And at what point did the president get involved, and how involved has the president been to make it a national program in addition to the work that's been happening in the Ministry of Finance?
Well, almost all the difficult decisions have to come to him and have his blessing, so his role is very important. I don't think that in this case I can work like this if I don't have the president like him, in the sense that he's not trusting us, he's not supporting, and sometimes I come with a very difficult decision. It's very unpopular. It's going to be politically sensitive. All those things, I think he gave comfortable support to us.
And when he appointed you, did he think that you would be leading a national reform program?
No. Okay. I'm just a Minister of Finance still. No.
So if you had this very reliable, it seems, source of political support with the presidency, I'm wondering, how did you approach building a public constituency for change, promoting the idea and the importance of reform amongst the general public, whether that was a concern of yours or not?
Well, first, the Indonesia setting after Suharto time, you have to know the setting in the sense that the media become very open and very democratic. Certainly, media is going to be very important in setting the tone and even can kill the idea at the very initial stage or even promoting, even they are not visible in this case. So they are very influential. So at the early stage of this reform, even before at the stage of increasing the remuneration, at that time, I have a continuous meeting with the media, chief editors and so on. And I told them, do you agree with what we are doing? Yes. You appreciating what we are doing? Yes. Could you support us? Certainly. Okay. Then I'm going to ask any help if I need from you. So at the time when I have to propose this remuneration, which is very sensitive to Indonesia, and I don't think, you know, that my top echelon, they told me that I'm going to fail. That at that time. They said, first, the parliament will not approve, and secondly, when it is put in the public, they just condemn us. So I said, oh my God, I cannot sustain this reform until I can deliver to my staff that they really have this remuneration which has become rational and logical to the structure. So if I fail here, then I fail the reform. So then I said, I want to have a meeting, intensive meeting with the chief editor. So I invite them again. And I said to them, you asked me to reform. Yes, I did. I'm doing it. I'm still continue doing it. But now I'm in a stage which is very critical. I'm going to increase the salary. I know you are all going to respond tomorrow in your headline, Minister of Finance, wasting money and so on. And without any output, it's going to be guaranteed. If you do that, I'm sure the reform is going to be killed immediately, tomorrow, I said. So it's really up to you. You want to support me? I'm here. I'm Sri Mulyani. I'm the same reformist as you think always, and you always call me that. I'm willing to do it. I try to doing it, but I cannot avoid the cause. So if you support me, please tone down the news about this. I don't know how you do it. I'm not going to bribe you because this is reform, so I'm not going to bribe any news. But if you really believe in what we are doing, so I really have to talk to all of them. Sometimes I have to come to each the newspaper office and so on. And I got a very good support. So the media, instead of putting that the Minister of Finance increasing 10 times is crazy, is very insensitive when the people are still poor, when the fuel price increase, and she's crazy increasing the salary. The media report is so positive about this. That's one thing. Secondly, on the parliament, you know what all my friends here, my colleague, Ibu, you are not going to pass unless you bribe them. I said, I'm reforming, I'm anti-corruption, and I'm going to make other people being bribed, to approve my program? No way, I said. If they don't like it, they are not going to support it, that's fine with me. This is not me, this is not my program, this is Indonesian program. They want to see Indonesia better, that's their problem. So I spend more time, certainly, but I didn't spend. You know what they said, all my staff here, they said, Ibu, we are willing to sacrifice our salary, 1 month's salary. It is not state money, it's our private money, to bribe them. I said, well, you're not taking the state salary, but you bribe those officials, that is the parliament, you are going to be put in jail because you're bribing the parliament. So in a way, it was a very interesting episode at that time. But you asked me about how I built the constituent and the support. I think it's more like the passion that those people believe what we are doing, because I really saying it. Well, if you have any other idea, better, clever, smart idea, let me know. I'm willing to listen. But if not, don't just saying that we cannot do. That means you just judging Indonesia as a failed state. And I don't want to let that. Is it?
Obviously, this was a big risk. If you'd increased the wages or the allowances and nothing had happened,
yes,
then you would have probably had to resign or something along those.
Correct.
Way. What steps did you take to try and make sure that you got something from your staff in exchange for increasing their salaries by so much?
Well, first, the work process and the methodology of work here. When we manage the budget, I said, if I have to increase by 6 trillion at that time, 0.6 million US dollar, 60 million US dollar, I said, how much I'm going to get from here? And this is Minister of Finance, you should be able to come with how much tax we are going to increase, how much custom revenue that I'm going to receive. Of course, I have to discount it with the economic growth, inflation, and so on. But how much is really coming from your own effort? And they said, I can double. Okay, that's good enough for me. Well, let's start with that. So we start with that. I think I'm also lucky. That's another factor, I have to admit that, because at the time the commodity boom and so on. So in a way, the tax revenue increased very significantly, the custom revenue is increased very significantly. Part can be explained in terms of the price, inflation, economic growth, but we can be very confident that it is because of the reform, that is the leakage, the corruption, those who took informally or illegally and so on. So we are achieving quite a lot. Secondly, we try to contain risk by putting, for example, like custom, we just concentrate in one location only first. But this is the Jakarta port, which is very important, 60% of the commodity in and out. And so that's become the most important one. I don't want to give any attention to the other port first. I'm going to make sure that this is going to be quite successful before we can replicate to others. So I think we can contain risk. We've already preparing the work methodology, the business process, which makes sure that the value is going to be quite minimum unless something really unexpectedly happened. And I'm lucky because the commodity price increased. And in a way, it quite And then people see it as a quite rewarding.
One issue that...
So I don't have to resign, obviously. Okay.
One issue I was wondering if you might comment on is the idea of patronage positions. I'm sure this is a challenge that you've encountered before, the idea that you have to accommodate certain parties, certain interests that want people in positions. And that can be necessary, that can be a fact of life. But I was wondering if you have developed strategies or tactics that can limit the negative impact of that kind of dilemma of being in that position.
Well, that is exactly the example of how difficult decisions need to be made and has been made. And because I always consult with the president, and the president said, "What do you think, Baba President, that I'm facing with this kind of situation?" He's the highest, of course. And he said, "Well, you just do according to the law." "Well, okay. If there will be a noise and so on, don't be surprised about this. Well, go ahead." I think the president, as long as he knew it, that there is a risk and he can calculate that one, I think he gave me a full support. And that is really relieving for us. Certainly, it's not only once. It's repeated in many places and example and so on. The most important also for our staff official here, that they knew that the minister and especially the president is fully backing them. Because on the first month or first year, you can still see that some of my official, like custom, they just release a merchandise because there is an SMS coming from a high office. And I said, "What did you do?" "We just released the merchandise." "Who ordered you?" "Well, it's very important people. He's very powerful. He's even powerful than you." "Oh yeah, then next time you do this, I'm going to fire you. This time I'm going to remove you from the seat. I don't care if somebody is going to order you either by fax or something, but if it is violating the law, either you out or also I'm out, they are going to sustain." So in a way, I think we try in one example to another example that they made a mistake on a fairly early stage because they think Indonesia is still the same, that with this call coming from political party leader and so on. I said, "Next time you did that, it's going to be you fired or I'm out or you out in this case." So I think they knew the message and they knew that it is also come and derived from the president who's very committed to that.
So you were doing a lot of reforms in the customs and tax within the Ministry of Finance, and you obviously had replaced the two director generals. Mm. How hands-on were you in telling them how to do the reforms within the Tax and Customs Department? And how much did you trust them to do the correct thing in terms of reforming their own department?
Well, I think first, if they convince... on the first month, certainly I have to be there. Physically present, even I have to listen and understand and when they present the case and so on. So on the second echelon, they fully familiar with the ministry position, thinking, and so on. But after a while, I think when I see that the mechanism is already work, I have already give a full trust for the new director general to work. And I said, "Well, you have 24 hours, 7, to always call me SMS if there is any emergency. But otherwise, I will let you... in charge, and you know that when you have to ask me for the support and so on." Because at the same time, we have to reform here. I have a lot of things to do as a Minister of Finance. I'm not just reforming and changing the organization. We have the Treasury reform here. We have the debt management team. We have the local government decentralization problem and so on. So there are so many other things. But in a way, the sense of what you call it management here is I give them all the full support and confidence. They have to do it. But the new principle and when they have to ask the ministers about judgment and so on. And the choice of the second echelon mostly is really, I said, certain posts on the second echelon, it should be the minister to decide. And I know which one, which is very, very important, which I think that it will not be blessed by me or approved unless I know the people. Many times in the custom and tax, I even have to interview by myself, those second echelon. And I said, "Come and I want to really know the person by themselves. And I really do the interview quite in depth, very long, because I really want to make sure that they knew that I trust them. I knew that they are no one here have they have a lot of skeleton in their closet, in this case, if you can call it that way, excess baggage in the past. I said, I don't care about that. But for example, for the very important position on the second echelon, I will ask them, have you received any bribe in the past? Yes. Okay. If I'm going to put you in this position, you need this position, it's very important. Those people who bribe you in the past, can they blackmail you? I don't think so. Can you guarantee me? Yes. Can you feel confidence if anyone is going to ask you to do something violating the law? All those kind of interview, I'm doing it because, you know, a certain very important position, you have to make sure that those people have the same confidence to do reform, although they have the past record, which is not that good. No one is clean. So that's very important to give them the confidence, and that's, okay, I trust you from now on. But if you have any difficulty at one point, those people come to you and is going to do, you have to tell me.
So obviously you've been a key factor in the reforms. What is going to happen when you leave?
Nothing going to happen. It's going to be fine. No. I mean, in the 4 years, we've already also designed this reform to be more like built into the system. We're just discussing in a couple of months later, because I knew that the period of time is going to end this October. So I said, how to make this reform become the continuous working programs, regardless who's going to chair or to become a Minister of Finance. So we've already designed it. Well, certainly it's going to have a transition. But I guess rationally we try to design it to not becoming, no one is indispensable in this case, including Sri Mulyani.
Well, now, obviously with all these reforms, timing is an issue, and no one has enough time to do it exactly how they wanted. So I'm wondering, had you had more time, would you have done things differently? Were there things that had to be pushed a certain way because of the constraints, the need to deliver immediately?
Well, I don't know. I never thought that way, actually. I'm too exhausted of managing the current overwhelm. I don't know whether if I have time to think whether I can do it better or faster. And maybe I don't think it's not faster, I guess. It's too fast, and sometimes it's already overwhelmed us. Better, maybe yes, I guess, in terms of, well, you know, I wish we have more flexibility, as you mentioned, about promoting people, rotating people, changing, because we are really tied with this civil servant regulation is hampering us in terms of the speed and so on. Secondly, also in terms of the flexibility of removing people with a golden shake hand or whatever, that's something which I wish we could have a more freedom to do it. I think we are compromising there quite significantly, I guess. So I'm worried that it is going to affect in terms of the quality and meritocracy and productivity. That is the area which I'm still concerned that I'm not delivering that. Reputation has become good, better, strong. Confidence is there, trust has been built. But if you talk about competent, productivity, the real, I think we still need time. And that has something to do with the whole structure of bureaucracy. So I wish I could change that.
Now, as you said, when you first came in, you were dealing with echelon one level, the highest level of the ministry that was not, they were not your staff, they were already there. Mm. And so I'm wondering, as an outsider, mm-hmm. I guess this issue, you touched on this issue when you mentioned that KPK was the ones to tell you that there were problems in the tax with mm-hmm. HR. How do you establish lines of information within your own ministry? How do you get the information you need mm-hmm. from within an organization that you yourself are trying to change?
Well, first you have to be really willing to spare enough time to go through detail. So you understand exactly the idea as well as the dynamic of this organization. And I'm not, in this case, I am a kind of person who's who not only willing, but I love to do it because I like to go through detail in this case. Not detail in terms of micromanage, but to be able to always there that they see me as a person that they just can tell me any story and I just believe that. I said, what is the logic of your story? Why are you doing this? So they feel intimidating that because I can even only ask something that they feel obliged to explain better or even convincingly. So the information, certainly through a direct meeting, physical presence is very important. This is unsubstitutable, I guess. So I design. Now, this is another thing, which is the creativity. Because I'm bored to always be in these ministries. I have more than 10 director general and offices everywhere in Jakarta. I said, I don't want to have the monthly meeting, top echelon, always in my office. First, the budget is going to be on me. I don't want all of you have to bear the budget. So why don't we make this kind of game? Every month we will go through each of them. So I can have the opportunity to go to each of the director general. They become a host, and each time they host, they are forced to present themselves, what's good about them. And of course, because first it was in one echelon, and they have a very good, not only presentation, not only the food, not only the arrangement, but they can show about how their staff has reformed. They can explain. So it's become really like a peer pressure for them. Okay, that's good. So we go from the tax, custom, treasury, to the even secretary general and others. Amazingly, it became a very good game for all of us. I was not thinking that way because out of my boring that I have to meet in the same building every time. But it became a very good peer pressure. I think in a way we create like a family game in this case, if you can call it that way, I guess. Yeah.
So in addition to this echelon one staff that you inherited, you do obviously have your personal staff that you can bring on and
no.
People you can no, you didn't
I,
have anyone
I limited,
that you could
no.
bring
in. I actually when I think I have to make them trust me, from the day one I tell them, although I come from University of Indonesia, of course there is good people there, I can always come. But I said, I'm going to work with you. I'm going to work with all of you here. I'm not going to bring any friends of mine, except if you can really not doing anything which is very particular. For example, the macroeconomists, this is very weak here. So I invite, and they all agree that no one can beat him on those expertise. So they understand that it is really still based on the merit as well as the professionalism. Second one on IT. We have a huge program on IT reform and no one really understands. So I invite my friends from the University of Indonesia, graduated from Illinois, he's a PhD in IT, and said, I'm going to ask him to become my second opinion because I don't know whether you are dictated by the supplier and so on. So I need to have that kind of view. So I only limit to invite 2 person as my special staff, and they fully, I think, agreed that even now they owe me a lot because they use my personal staff more to their thing that, oh, why I cannot think that way. So I think in a way the trust building is very important on the very that they feel that I'm not really threatening them, I'm part of them, that we recognize the problem honestly, frankly, and we try to really focus in terms of how we can solve the problem, not by saying that I don't like you, I change you, I bring my own people and so on. So the harmony as well as what you call it, the feel that I am there as part of them is very important on the very beginning. I think that's what makes the confidence as well as what you call acceptance is there.
Now, one of the side effects of the reform in the Ministry of Finance has been that the profile of the ministry has risen a lot. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, have you had to encounter the problem of retaining staff, qualified staff? Because this is an issue we usually come across. Mm. People lose staff that can be the private sector, can even be other public sector positions.
Well, fortunately, Indonesia is not like in the United States yet, yeah, in this case, that you have a good stuff and then people still can value that more in terms of really working within the government. But I cannot, promise this is going to long last, especially for my division who's really working with the market, in the interaction is really there, like the capital market regulator, tax even, custom, and then the debt management, because they are really work. At some point, I'm going to face with it. But if you ask me now, in the first five, because I promote a lot of young staff, they are excited. There are many people now who want to join with us rather than. So I haven't faced with this kind of situation yet, I guess.
Why do you think some of the other reforms in the national bureaucratic reform process haven't been as successful as the Ministry of Finance has?
I don't know whether others is not successful because I'm not making an assessment and review about that. Is it really not a perception problem, or this is the quality of judgment?
Well, you mentioned that perhaps they hadn't met their thresholds for the,
for
the allowances. I was just wondering.
Okay. Well, first, I think the commitment of the top position, that is very important. I think the commitment not only that, yes, I committed, I want to reform, but mostly because they really don't know what reform is, in the sense that we always say that reform is like changing not only the regulation policy, but business process, delivery, predictability, or even the ultimate goal is creating confidence, trust, and so on. So that's really, I think, is quite lacking in many. They just say that I want to reform, and that's it. They think that it's like coming from heaven, and when you pray, it's there. So it's there, I guess. Secondly, I think the not only commitment and understanding, the leadership should have what I said again and again in my story, that they are ready to do and to give an example. They themselves is not going to bring their crony, in this case, or friends. They themselves respecting the bureaucracy in terms of the meritocracy. And they are ready to make a difficult decision of punishing their own friends. You know, I am still a normal human being. I can feel very pity to others, and I can be very passionate. But I said, what first for the organization? And that's many is actually when they face with some of an unproductive or those violating, they're not ready to do the what you call it, the punishment, or even come with a reward. So I guess that is not only just a commitment, but also the ability to deliver with a concrete step that can convince their staff, their peer, that, oh, this is what you mean by reform. Because you're just not saying that reform, and then suddenly my letter coming like 1 month late, and I said, what is reform? What is the SOP from that table to this table? Why it comes so late? So all those things. And I think the pressure, the constant pressure that need to be provided by the top position is very important.
How do you think the fact that you came from academia rather than from the civil service, mm-hmm. or from political background affected the way you were able to work within the ministry and with other people in government?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think I work with logic, certainly, as an economist. You are familiar with a lot of literature about reform. You know about many reform which is fail or success. You know the difficult reform is always saying that you pay now, but you get the benefit later, so there is a mismatch of the timing. There is always a mismatch between who's benefiting for the reform and who should pay the cost, so there is a problem with who will bear the burden and so on. Theoretically, I knew about the reform. At least I can claim myself I'm quite expert for literature of the reform in this case. But whether I train to really doing it, no, I think it's just intuitive. I think I try to communicate what I understand reform with others. And all the bureaucrats, the bureaucrat, the echelon one, they are a very expert bureaucrat, of course. They have all the experience. So I ask them to help me to translate this idea into reality, how we should do this and that. So I think it's a very good chemistry as well as complementary from my own background as an academic. The other thing that maybe have a more advantage is because I come from the university and not political party, I think the trust is there. So I don't have any problem of what you call it, building the trust or so on.
Now, as you say, there's no real book you can turn to for how to do reform. It's kind of it's an intuitive thing for a lot of people, and I think you mentioned that. And part of what we try to do is capture the experience of leaders like yourself for others who are trying to emulate the same degree of reform. So I'm wondering, maybe one way to get at that is, are there certain things looking back now that had you known at the start would have made your tasks vastly easier, or things you would have liked to have been prepared for?
Mm. Well, for sure, if I can answer easily, if the president and all the cabinet have the real idea about reform, it will be much easier, I guess. I think everybody in Indonesia make a very good speech about reform, but many of them really don't know about what reform is in this case. So, I think they need to have a real example. And what we are doing now is the real example, which is make the Indonesian people becoming easier to understand the concept of reform. And that will help a lot in terms of accelerating the process itself. So in that case, meaning that if the very beginning, because when we start with this cabinet, it's actually 5 years after Suharto has been fought, and certainly the 5 years is enough for everybody to be disappointed, to everybody talk and claim reform, but they really don't know. So in a way, I guess that was amazingly, not many people really understand the reform. And especially in translating those ideas into reality, that is maybe the most difficult part, I guess.
So bureaucracies are notoriously difficult to work with. They resist change. Mm-hmm. Did you encounter any particularly difficult points when mm-hmm. you felt that the bureaucracy wasn't helping you in your reform? And how did you go about dealing with those mm-hmm. people or those units?
Well, most important is they have a very strong esprit de corps.
Yeah.
And that is the most difficult part, because then not only esprit de corps in Indonesia culture, also you are not shaming people. That is not appropriate. So in Indonesia, we can be, as I said earlier, too generous and too kind to the people who's not performing or even violating rule and so on. But at the cost of those who really work good, they have become the victim of this kind of system. So I always said to all my colleagues here that bad money drives out good. So if you want here to become just a bunch of losers or a bunch of, because you want to maintain this, then that's the consequence. But I guess I think the way I deal with it is actually try to explain them rationally about whether that kind of spirit justify or not, and it will cost more to their own individual reputation as well as the institutional reputation rather than the benefit that they think they can maintain or they can earn. And I think most of the time, after a very long talk, repeating meeting, convince them, sometimes it's exhausting one, most of them, they, well, of course I'm the boss, that's why they cannot say no. But I'm using on a very last resort of really using my authority to do it. I don't like to actually order people only like that. Usually I motivate them with, do you think this decision is really the right one for the organization? Not just you want to please me by saying yes. So for them, I think because they feel now they are in charge, so their reputation. Another thing is also because of the transparency, I think. In a way that the media people, the television and all, they can really observe us. This is like a really transparent institution. And I'm not shy by saying that, well, I'm sorry, I try to improve it, but not all my staff is honest still now. If some of them is still a very bad guy, so please help me. Outside, I'm always asking people outside to help me, to monitor us, to supervise us. So they knew that the minister is asking them, ask them outsider to look at us. So those bureaucrats can also have a, what you call it? They have a hard feeling on what I'm saying. But no, then inside I'm saying that, well, because you are a public institution, I'm a public officer. This is not private company, not my own family company. So, okay. I think time is up. Well, you still have a lot of questions. I can talk about reform a long time, but
I guarantee you we can talk even longer.
but if you really still need and you think there are still quite a topic or a substance that you need to cover and not yet, why don't you look at what I've already telling you this story, and then if you still come up, we can. How long you're going to be here, or you're going to be here for quite long?
Unfortunately, only until Saturday.
But we are planning on coming back to Indonesia in the future.
Yeah, so let's see on the Saturday if we still have and squeeze time. If you really still have some question need to be asked.
This is certainly, we'd be very keen. Yeah. We'll talk to your staff then.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
You talk to Rio, and then maybe if that's really critical, and you can come.
Okay? Thank you very much.